This episode is brought to you by Haptix. Do you want to help build the future of VR? Haptix is hiring. Haptix is a team of engineers that's researching, developing, and productizing haptic technology that makes virtual reality feel real. Ben Lang from Road to VR describes Haptix gloves as the closest he's come to touching the virtual world. If that sounds like something you want to be a part of, visit haptix.com/careers. That's haptix.com/careers. And be sure to reference the Research VR podcast on your application. I've actually gone down to the offices of Haptix in San Luis Obispo in California, and it's a wonderful place with a bunch of really interesting people that love tackling one of the hardest problems in VR, which is haptic feedback. So if you're interested in this technology and can see a future in it, which we clearly do because of how much we talk about it, look at the open positions that Haptix has and feel free to apply. I know a lot of you that are listening are developers, hackers, engineers, coders, designers, a whole bundle of talents that are needed in this new and interesting industry. So check out Haptix's careers page. I should mention that we want to also use this space for sponsors to give you listeners things that you actually would like to know about, whether it's products that we have no problem endorsing to you, the developers, or even career opportunities that are open from these companies for developers like you. So everything that you will hear before and after each episode of this podcast, I promise you, will be entirely relevant to your interests and might even be a great career opportunity for you. So check them out and on to the show. And welcome back to the Research VR podcast, everyone, the podcast behind the science and design of virtual reality. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me today are two special guests from Story Up Studios. We have Sarah Hill, who is the CEO and chief storyteller. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, great to be here.
And we have Dr. Jeff Tarrant, chief science officer and the makers of Helium. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And of course, beaming in from Germany, we have Mr. Peter Leckoff.
Hello, everyone. Yes, we have been touching here and there on those topics, but I hope we will dig up a little bit deeper today.
Today, we're going to be talking about mindfulness, about meditation, about using VR and consumer EEGs to be able to track your mental state and to see what biofeedback can help you achieve. So, Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about how you found yourself in this realm of virtual reality? What were the things that led you to being here?
So I was trying to find a solution for a group of aging veterans who weren't able to physically travel to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. And what we noticed in thousands of demos is that VR appeared to be affecting their physiology. And that was when I reached out to my longtime friend, colleague, and fellow technologist, Dr. Tarrant, to study what are these experiences doing to the brain? And can we compound these media experiences in a way that can actually have an impact on their well-being? And the answer to that was yes. And so that's how we got into Helium. And my background is as a television journalist, and we had been using augmented reality since 2011. And as you know, in a high-paced television career, covering trauma and things like that, anxiety is obviously a big concern. So Helium is as much for me as it is for all of the other people out there who struggle with anxiety.
So Sarah, if I remember correctly, StoryUp also created documentaries, correct?
Right. We started out as a brand studio. And so we created a lot of immersive films of the memorials that would allow those veterans to physically travel there. We've done VR documentaries in Congo, Zambia, Amazon. We just wrapped one in China not too long ago. So we are VR creators, and Helium, H-E-A-L-I-U-M, is our first product.
Yeah, so my background is as a psychologist, and I've been using neurofeedback in my work as a psychologist for about 20 years, and I've known Sarah for a very long time in different ways. And when I saw what she was doing with the virtual reality, you know, that was very intriguing. I had never worked with virtual reality before, but saw the work she was doing, and really it was like, hey, how can we work together? And luckily, we already had a relationship, and things have just sort of taken off from there. And so, of course, the basic idea of neurofeedback is you're measuring brainwave activity, and then feeding that information back to somebody in a way that they can learn to modify, manipulate, change their own brainwaves. And so from a clinical perspective, we've been using this for ADHD, for seizures, for traumatic brain injury, for anxiety, depression, for all kinds of things for a long time. Essentially understanding that the brain gets stuck in certain patterns, and sometimes that's not helpful patterns. And if you can teach the brain to do something different, you can alleviate symptoms. Now, in terms of a consumer version, it's a little trickier because you don't want to just have people messing around with their brain waves and doing who knows what. So it's a little bit tricky in terms of figuring what are the specific ways that we can basically ask anybody to do this that will be beneficial and not potentially problematic. You know, what we've been doing with the Neuromeditation Institute and then now with Helium is recognizing that there are certain brainwave patterns that are directly associated with different states of meditation. So all meditations are not the same. It depends on how you're using your attention. It depends on what your intention is. So focus meditations are different than mindfulness, which are different than open heart, which are different than quiet mind. And so because with each of those states, pretty much I don't think anybody would think that meditation is problematic for you. I mean, everybody should meditate. It's a good thing. So in this way, we are using the EEG monitoring, the BCI interface to monitor states of consciousness associated with meditation and using that to encourage people into these specific states. And so in this way, I feel very confident that what we're doing is it can be nothing but helpful. It's kind of like training wheels, you know.
Now, maybe a short question. So you mentioned you measure different states of consciousness. I assume you're speaking about different wavelengths that something is ringing. So you're speaking about different wavelengths, right, of the brain activity?
Different wavelengths and in different locations in the brain. You know, we have fast brain waves, we have slow brain waves, and we have everything in between. And they're associated with different states of consciousness. So the primary program that we've been working with Helium so far has been looking at gamma asymmetry. So we're looking at gamma, which is pretty much the fastest brainwave that we look at right now. There are faster brainwaves, but we're not quite sure what they do yet. So gamma is somewhere in the 40 hertz range, kind of around there, 35 to 55, something like that. And we're looking at gamma in left frontal areas compared to right frontal areas. And the reason that we're measuring that is because we know from lots and lots of research that's been done for about 30 years that when the left frontal side of the brain is more active, people tend to feel more happy. They tend to feel more positive. They tend to feel more uplifted. This is a pattern that we see with Tibetan monks when they're engaging in a compassion meditation, this left frontal activation. The right side tends to be more active when people are feeling pessimistic or negative or depressed. It's actually associated with depression. So what we're actually doing with this protocol is encouraging people to shift that activity over to the left side. So, you know, the brain is making pretty much every frequency from below 1 hertz. So when we say 1 hertz, we're talking about cycles per second. So, you know, if you map it out and look at one of these waves on a time schedule, you know, if you see one big giant slow wave, that's going to be a delta wave, you know, 1 hertz per second. And the brain makes that, it makes things slower than that, and it makes things all the way up to 100 cycles per second. And it's doing this everywhere, all the time, simultaneously. So this is where it gets tricky because we tend to think about, oh, they're in an alpha state. And we think about that as sort of suggesting that there's only alpha happening. And the reality is all of the other brainwaves are still there, but maybe they're not dominant. Maybe alpha has increased in a much more dramatic way than the other brainwaves. So the proportion of the brainwaves is what really matters because you have all of them all the time everywhere. So, you know, like you mentioned, like as you start to relax, the alpha waves should increase. So you have more alpha, or as you go to sleep, the theta and the delta are going to increase. Or when you're doing math homework, your beta is going to increase. You know, that sort of thing.
But it's not just about the ratio between those frequencies. From what I understood, what you basically described about the different patterns in different hemispheres, it's also about where is the signal is located, right? So where the signal is coming from. So you could have, when you measure, as is usually with sleep research, across the globe, you know, you have this frequency or that frequency, you know, you have more alpha, okay, cool. You start to fall asleep, but you are more interested in the ratio between the hemispheres and also the areas, right? Right? So it's correct. Kind of a more complex view to actually, a more complex way to view it.
Correct. Right. And so, you know, with what we're doing with helium, we're linking the, the VR headset and the software with the Muse headband. And we're using the Muse headband because it's consumer friendly. It's easy to access. It's Bluetooth. But that only gives us access to the front channels and then behind the ears. There's only four channels. So there are some limitations around what we can do with that. However, what we're doing is we're taking these protocols that we're designing and then we're evaluating them, measuring the entire brain using 19 channels to see, well, what is happening? So, you know, we're using the Muse headband as an easy interface. It's an easy way to access and work with it. But then we're using a larger system to really evaluate.
On the output.
Correct. The output, yeah. And the reason you use only 19 electrodes is because you're not so much interested in the source, but rather the distribution, right?
Well, I mean, we are interested in both. And so, you know, partially what
so EEG systems can go up to 265 or,
yes.
64 electrodes.
Right, yeah. And, you know, and so those are big, you know, massive lab, university, hospital type systems. And those are valuable for specific kinds of research. With what we're doing, 19 electrodes is sufficient. And actually you still can extrapolate into some deeper brain regions, even with 19 electrodes. It's not as precise as if you have, you know, 200 and whatever electrodes, but it's precise enough that you can, you know, you can still pick up some information about specific brain regions like the anterior cingulate, which is, you know, an area that we're interested in.
How come the anterior region is so interesting? Does it show a certain pattern related to meditation states or?
Well, the anterior cingulate, so it runs right down the midline and it's basically right on your forehead, but right in the center. And
so where the motor cortex is, right? So where the motor systems are basically.
Yeah, the motor systems go kind of the other direction. So it's kind of ear to ear.
Okay.
The sensory motor strip, yeah, kind of goes ear to ear across that way. The cingulate runs right down the middle from basically the middle of your forehead all the way to the back. And the anterior cingulate is involved in things like sustaining attention. And so even just that by itself, you can see how that would be really important for meditation. It's like, can you hold your attention on one thing? But that region is also important for the stress and anxiety response, because when people are anxious, they often hold their attention inappropriately. So, you know, if you think about what worry is pretty much holding your attention on something over and over and over and over again, thinking the same thoughts that aren't helpful. And so the anterior cingulate can get stuck and cause problems, or we can use it as a way to teach a person how to focus. So it depends on how you're using the brain region and if it's helpful or if it's causing problems. So you can see why that region in particular would be very interesting for us and very important on both sides.
Interesting.
Helium is not meant to be any replacement for any kind of psychotropic medication. It's a self-awareness tool, a self-awareness tool. It allows the user to become more self-aware that their thoughts and feelings have power to control things, not only in the virtual world, but then when they take off the headset in the real world as well. So it's educating them about their thoughts and emotions, and that, you know, the more feelings of positivity that you have, you can hatch butterflies from a virtual chrysalis. And then outside the goggles or outside the augmented reality experience, you can imagine those butterflies, you know, being hatched from that chrysalis with those same feelings. So Jeff mentioned training wheels. And really, that's you know, what it is. It's just making you more self-aware that when you think something, something actually happens in your body. So as far as, you know, who are using helium kits, they're being used in areas of situational, workplace, or confined stress. So anything that sucks that you have to go through, you can use helium. Helium is being used for compassion fatigue with nurses in a large DC hospital system. We were on the flight deck of the USS Nimitz out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, which is an aircraft carrier. You know, those sailors don't see nature for months. With helium, we can put them in nature. They can not only see nature, but they can see and become more self-aware of what those emotions feel like. Schools are using helium for students. But before they take tests, teachers and firefighters, and some of our initial data that we've, a couple published studies have come out with a group of firefighters showing that helium in as little as 4 minutes, according to these studies in Frontiers in Psychology and also the Journal of Neuroregulation, that it significantly reduces moderate anxiety and also increases feelings of positivity. But helium is not meant to be any kind of replacement for psychotropic medication. We're not diagnosing, curing, or treating any kind of disease. It's a self-awareness tool that you, this is a feeling mirror, and all those data on your wearables that have been sequestered in your watch or in a headband or in your flat phone, we're untethering that data and bringing it out into the virtual and augmented reality environments and allowing you to play with it, to interact with it, and to learn more about how your feelings are perceived and operate.
Regards to a few terms. So you mentioned BCI, so brain-computer interface. In a sense, I think you would argue that it's a brain-computer interface because it does not only measure what your brain does, but it kind of also changes the way the environment and your virtual world basically behaves, right? So you're basically compensating for certain activity of the brain with certain imagery and try to guide the person into a restful or mindful state, right? Have you considered, right now you use a Muse EEG headset because I assume it's very available, but have you, for example, also thought about marrying something like skin conductance or some other biological or biofeedback markers that could provide even more insight into the person's state, maybe even eye tracking and some other things? Because through eye tracking, you could technically measure arousal or even stress.
Yeah, there are so many different biofeedback tools that can all be very useful, especially with stress and anxiety. So skin conductance, heart rate variability, respiration rate, all of these things. And the answer to your question is yes, we are working on incorporating other systems besides the Muse headband. We started there. Right now, we're working on and Sarah can talk more about this, but working on a project to work on lowering your heart rate, just your basic heart rhythm, and using that through using breath exercises and meditative kinds of experiences. In the future, yes, we have plans for incorporating all of those other metrics. So the idea would be that over time, you would be able to use the Helium software with any number of wearables.
And then depending on how much you can spend or whether you get a custom headset, you get basically even more precise or better experiences. It's actually nice because, I mean, from a scientific point, you would always argue, we need more precision, more data. We need to, do pilots and all crazy stuff. But I mean, from the perspective of a startup, just choosing the tool that is right there, like the Muse headset, and just going for it and later upgrading, it's actually a very good and novel approach. Regards making it consumer friendly, so it's nice. Thanks. And when we think about different people using it, how do you convince people to use it? Because I think people who love meditation would naturally be already able to meditate, but I guess your target group are rather people who are not that much aware of the techniques, right?
Right. And this is not a close your eyes and meditate kind of product. It's an open your eyes and become more self-aware of what that looks like. And it's kind of like a barometer for meditation. in that, how am I doing? Are some of what I'm thinking, am I actually hitting the mark? So we call it a feeling mirror, because it really allows you to see those feelings for some of the very first time. I think Jeff has to go.
I do have to go in just a second. I apologize for that.
Thank you.
Hi, Sarah.
Take care.
See ya.
So now that Dr. Jeff has left, now we can have a real conversation. I'm just joking. I guess the question that comes to mind is, from what I've read on your website, is you also want to incorporate it being the storyteller that you are, you also want to incorporate the person's state of mind as an input into story, let's say a branch narrative or whatnot. Can you tell us more about that in terms of how you see this technology being used to control stories, or is that something that you're working on currently, and what have you learned in that regard?
We've created several different stories that are controlled by your biometrics. So for instance, and a lot of them are real stories. So there is a bur oak tree that is a really old historic tree in our area. And our XR design lead, Ricky Broccoli, built it to scale. And as your gamma asymmetry goes up, as those feelings of positivity rise higher, being captured by the Muse headband, you see your blue brainwaves above a red bar. As long as you keep those feelings of positivity above the red bar, different assets manipulate in the environment. So you're presented with a story about this barren tree that survived floods, droughts, stress, you know, all of those many, many years, but yet it's persevered. And as those feelings of positivity go on, you can heal the tree. You can erase the graffiti that the vandals put on the tree. You can add blooms to the tree. The grass grows greener. Fireflies and butterflies grow in. You look down and you see the bench, the old tattered bench that was cracked and warm, has suddenly transformed into brand new wood. So it's, you know, you're essentially healing that environment and going deeper into that story with your biometrics. You know, right now we have the Muse as one biometric, and Dr. Tarrant mentioned we have an Apple Watch integration that will be coming out shortly, that you can control these experiences not only with those feelings of gamma asymmetry or left frontal gamma, but also with your heart rate as well. And if you're watching anything that's coming out with the Apple Watch and their announcements about ECG and real-time heart data, that's very exciting to interactive biometric neuro storytellers, you have a new remote control. And really, that's what we look at the biometrics as, not, you know, a diagnostic or tool in any way. It's just a remote, a data stream that you're getting from your wearables, that you're using that to manipulate the environment.
I was going to say, I think this is a theme that we keep coming back to with these devices becoming even more intimate with our bodies, right? Whether it's a VR headset with an eye tracker inside that's understanding everything that you're engaging with and are attracted to, with, or combine that with a watch that also knows, you know, how your entire body is doing. How do you really see, let's forget the hardware that exists today and perhaps extrapolate by a few years in front of us. How do you really see yourself taking advantage of these devices becoming even more intimate? Is it a way of just understanding the user and trying to reduce stress, or are there other interesting elements you can incorporate into stories by understanding the user state?
Yes. And we are just at the beginning of the beginning of the beginning. We know what we have now is going to change immensely with the hardware. If you're following anything that's happening with Lucid Labs, a Korean company is building a neat piece of hardware that has EEG sensors baked inside the head mask. Obviously, as people who tell stories with those sensors, that's very attractive to us. All the great work that Neurable is doing with the HTC Vive and hardware mm-hmm. that's integrated with a lot of sensors all around the head, that is enabling storytellers, biometric XR storytellers to have a new input. And two, Magic Leap, you know, it has a biomarker kit. We've not yet had this, you know, seen it yet, but who knows, is there a heart rate monitor baked, you know, inside that face mask? We don't know. So, all of this hardware integrating biometric devices, the days of us having to, you know, get a third party piece of hardware are limited, because much like, you know, headphones are integrated into VR headsets, it's really simple to put an EEG strip on the headband. In fact, at CES last year, Muse showed how they had incorporated into the face mask of a Gear VR. One of those face masks. We've talked with some of the folks at Oculus who indicated that might be a battery drain and might be difficulty. So, you know, who knows how long it is until everything is it all in one device. But the fact that you can use your smartwatch and your smartphone, even outside the goggles, has value. You can get the idea that your thoughts have power inside this, the Helium, the virtual feeling mirror that we've built to become more self-aware of your emotions.
Mm. So, I mean, regards hardware, I guess the biggest influencer regards what kind of hardware will be built in those headsets is or are companies like yours, because, I mean, why would, you know, Oculus or any other HMD manufacturer decide to build in, you know, EEG electrodes and do something special or unique, or unique in a certain way when there is no content, no use case that has been shown. So in a sense, you might be the reason with your company that maybe in one or two generations, together with a few other startups that also are doing something in that direction, you know, you convince basically Oculus, okay, we'll actually put those EEG electrodes into the headset, because it's actually not that costly, and it should also not drain the battery. But I have another question to you. Would you maybe see your product as a way to establish a better communication with oneself? So maybe just to rephrase the question, when I, when I sometimes I'm running, I don't know what is my heart rate. So I'm looking at a heart rate monitor, and the heart rate monitor basically shows me how my body is feeling. So in a sense, is your product basically designed to consciously read the unconscious signals that the body is signaling through the biofeedback markers and understanding yourself better and get a better feeling for your own body?
Yeah, that's a better way to describe it. Instead of it being a flat monitor, what we've devised is a story-driven immersive media monitor, a more engaging way to see your biometrics and to know that they have power and what they're doing. In fact, in the experience that we're building for heart rate, it's this hot air balloon. And, you know, you see your heart rate displayed on the basket of that hot air balloon. Well, yeah, you can see it as digits on a screen, or you can see your breath inflate a hot air balloon. You know what I mean? It goes up. It's the difference between flat media and the virtual world. And much like research has shown that, virtual reality is more emotionally engaging than regular flat media, it's the same way when it comes to seeing your biometrics displayed on the screen. And back to your previous question, I should also mention too that it's just not us creating this kind of content. There are some great labs, some great research entities out there who have a use for BCI and other biometric inputs inside VR. So Neuroscape, if you're following what they're doing, and Akili Labs, how they are using neuro-driven experiences to try to solve real world medical problems. Obviously, you know, we're in the well-being space and not a medical company, but, you know, that has value. Definitely these sensors need to be integrated in the headsets, need to be integrated more easily into mobile devices so that product, is more seamless. But yes, it's a more immersive way to see what's happening inside your body. It is a feeling mirror of sorts. And that's what people tell us for the very first time. They're like, I've never seen my brain waves in near real time. I've never known. I mean, you can feel your heart beating, but the first thing when people put it on, they doubt whether or not those are their brain waves in the screen. and we actually have to point at them, because for some reason it's universal. Whenever you point at somebody, for most people, you can see that that gamma asymmetry goes down, except for people who used to being shouted at, I guess, that as a football player or something like that. But if you point at them and shake their finger and sometimes yell at them, you can see it, it drop. And only then do they realize, oh my gosh, those are my, like, those are my waves. My brain really has an electrical activity. And it's like, yes, it has power. And when you think different things, it moves. But it's, you know, if you don't look at yourself in the mirror, you don't know that your thoughts have power.
It's like the first time seeing yourself in the mirror, actually, right? Yeah. It's just a different part of yourself that you usually don't see. It's like a confused cat who looks at a mirror and tries to figure out, what is it here?
Right.
What's going on?
And yet, we as humans don't look at ourselves in a neurological mirror very often. And so what is that doing to our health when we're not self-aware of, you know, what those certain feelings should look like? Can you imagine not looking at your hair for a week and what a mess it could be? And yet we as humans have never seen, really, truly seen our neurological reflection displayed right in front of the screen to know it has power.
I guess the question that comes to mind, and I think you're slightly touched on this, where what are the specific meditative practices that you want people to learn from that they do in VR that you mentioned, you know, then you can employ in your life afterwards, outside of VR? How are you training people to keep that, you know, that the gamma levels higher than that specific bar that you had? Rather than just seeing it, like, I'm guessing there's something that you're trying to teach, some sort of practice that you're trying to teach people to do to keep thinking those positive thoughts?
Yeah, some of the different sectors of neuromeditation, which are in regular meditation: quiet mind, open heart, focus, mindfulness. And if you go inside the Helium app, we have a demo app. You could see those different segments also in the pro version of our app as well. But within that, Dr. Tarrant is using emotional recall. So research has shown, in fact, I was just talking with someone from HeartMath, the great work that they do at HeartMath, and they were talking about how when it comes to lowering heart rate, emotional recall, recalling a memory, has great power for people. So when you put on the headset and that experience for the first time, a narrator, you know, tells you what's about to happen and says, recall a happy memory, a time when you felt love, joy, or appreciation. And then use that feeling to, grow your tree, to hatch your butterfly, to float up the side of a waterfall, to go deeper inside a nebula, inside a fractal animation. You can change the seasons at Emerald Lake from a very winter barren scene to a very summer bright scene just with those feelings of positivity. So as an answer to your question, open heart, focus, and mindfulness.
Right. And specifically, like, trying to use previous emotional memories of yourself feeling these things and trying to harness, like, you know, the feeling of feeling those things into the present moment.
And what's really interesting is that we as humans
really effective
don't know always what it is that makes us happy. So for instance, full disclosure here, when I tried it for the very first time, I thought, you know what, I'm going to think of my kids. They're 22 and 20, great kids. That surely will make it go up. No, it did not. Why? Well, our kids give us, you know, stress. Are they going to graduate? Are they going to, you know, meet a nice girl? But what did make it go up for me was my dog. So I don't know why, but it's not necessarily
nothing but positive emotions.
Right.
Yes.
It's not necessarily what you think it is that'll make it the environment react. And for me, that has value. You know, if I'm going through a stressful situation, I know exactly now that emotional recall that I have to mention when I'm outside the goggles, because it's been etched into my brain, of those butterflies hatching from the chrysalis, going up the waterfall, deeper into nebula, you know, changing the seasons. I have guided imagery, which psychologists have used in the flat world for a very long time. It's the same thing in immersive media.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Dogs for sure exhibit more positivity in our lives than the humans in our families.
Definitely. That's for sure. Or maybe, you know, you have to see research VR as a picture and then your happiness factors just raise on up.
Just think of our lovely voices. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But I want actually to be a devil's advocate here. So it's just one issue I would like to quickly discuss here, because whenever I talk, and I talk in a very similar, maybe not elaborate way to a lot of people about, you know, those, you know, iWatch from Apple and all those devices, we can finally measure our body and understand better. And a lot of people have a very distinct and unique response. Like they're saying, yeah, but why would you need to quantify your body? Why do you need to measure so much? Isn't it changing the relation between you and your body in a negative way, where you're trying to, you know, to count something of your body, quantify it? And I don't necessarily agree with them, but I would like to know how you would respond to some folks who would say, okay, yeah, now I can quantify my brain better, but isn't it a distorted perception of myself, or isn't it changing the way how you communicate with your own body? Because some people tend to believe that when you actually have the numbers and you quantify and you look at graphs, you suddenly are more you're far away from your body than you used to be before.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you're losing weight, should you weigh yourself every week or every single day or every single hour? And the answer to that is no. We're certainly not advocating that you wear virtual reality goggles 24/7 and, you know, stay jacked into helium the whole entire time. No, it's something that's a tool that you check in, something that reminds you those training wheels. Perhaps it's not even meant to be, you know, used forever, but that you have that general baseline to know, you know, what's your body's doing. I mean, imagine, you know, feeling your arm move, but never actually seeing it move. There's some coordination that has to go in that effort. And so, you know, really it's the same way with helium. You are coordinating a part of your body, essentially, to be reminded that it has power and, you know, it can act in concert in a variety of different ways. But no, we're not advocating that you, you know, wear the goggles 24/7 and constantly check in with it. It's, you know, something that can be used at your discretion. I use it a lot when I go to sleep at night because I can feel it, you know, slowing the fast activity in my brain. And I imagine, you know, floating up the side of that waterfall with those feelings.
Right. I think if you're not measuring something, you really can't change the thing that you have in mind to change. I've thought about, you know, my usage of my phone a lot, about how much, you know, I'm glued to it, or how much context switching I'm doing every time I pick up my phone in the middle of a task, right? Up until, you know, this newest release of iOS 12, I was just like, oh, it's in the back of my mind. Like, maybe I'm using too much social media. Maybe I'm using too much of this. But because of the pressure that now people have been putting on these tech companies about usage numbers, now they're starting to integrate these tools into the products that kind of help you both limit yourself, but also just look at your usage. So this is something that I added to my life, which was like, let's put literally a hard limit on social media usage per day on my phone. And it's the first week is kind of weird, because like I would see that pop up. It would be like, oh, there's only 2 more minutes left in your social media allowance. You know, just be careful. And I actually did notice a huge, it went down by hours, like the amount of hours I was spending on Twitter and Instagram because I set a hard limit on myself on a daily basis. So now I'm pretty, I like pop into it and I pop out. As soon as I feel myself that I'm scrolling, just mindlessly scrolling, I pop myself out, I lock my phone, or I go into, you know, something that I consider to be something somewhat more productive than, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, your media has a diet. Everything you consume with your mouth, it's the same way with media consumption. Myself, as a former journalist, I consumed a lot of crap over the last 25 years. In fact, I sat by a police scanner every single day, you know, and think about what kind of inputs you're putting into your mind and your body in that way. And it's the same with helium and immersive media. Think of it like a detox, if you would, for all, not necessarily things that are bad, but things that don't serve you. And you know, helium is a way that you can let go of those things that don't serve you and become more self-aware of the positive things that you know you could be consuming from your media diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems it's like positivity term. Is that kind of the one direction that you want people to be going in? Or is it a kind of holistically understanding what state of mind you're in, and perhaps just that mere understanding is in itself a healing aspect? Or what are the core kind of principles that you want people to learn from healing?
Positivity is a start, and probably, you know, my background with a journalist and telling people on the evening news every day how bad the world is. This is a way to unravel, you know, some of the damage that, you know, our world does to itself. Not journalists not doing that damage anyway. They're just holding up a mirror, you know, and telling people some of the things that are happening in the world. But it is an antidote for a lot of things that, you know, could be solved with some more self-awareness of what those feelings look like.
Hmm. Yeah, it's perhaps a selective mirror, right? As news and media, it's the things that should be worth pointing to and talking about, but perhaps at this point when we have so much access to everything that is happening, we don't realize that how much negative things always do happen, which I think also drown out how much positive and forward and how much advancements we've had over the last, you know, 100-200 years. That negativity bias of news is definitely something that is there's actually good research on, in terms of like the same story with one being slightly more negative in emotion, and the editor kind of picking, the more negative version of the story because it's a little bit more emotionally engaging, you know, it might drive better traffic. So I think maybe that we are in deep need of like for us to take a step back from the craziness that is happening in this world, you know, especially today in 2018, you know, we're both living in America. I think it's an interesting time to be here and to be surrounded by so much emotion and outrage of things. We perhaps need to take a step back and understand, you know, what are the immediate dangers to ourselves and take care of things.
Can you imagine if that's all you consumed day after day was, you know, and that's where a lot of people get their news and information is from their social media feed. And, you know, a lot of negativity that's happening there. You know, not to lay blame on anyone, but you have to do something to counteract that. Or, you know, lest you look in the mirror all the time and think that the world is a terrible place. It's not. You know, there's things that have great value that are going on in the world. But if you never take a moment to consume it, you know, you forget what those, you know, feelings feel like.
Right. Yeah, it really is. Like, I think we have such... what is?
But isn't it interesting that for basically having a better view of the world, you have to first dive into something virtual, that only through the journey of exploring yourself through a virtual mirror, which is mirroring through imagery that your brain can actually understand through the visual pathways. Only through that you can somehow detach yourself from the world and, you know, be grounded again to the real world. Isn't that somehow, I don't know.
Well, let's be honest, the best, you know, form of communication is human to human. But for some people,
true.
Whether
it's just not expensive.
Yeah, well, that, or, you know, there's a barrier to entry there. Not everyone has, you know, the ability to have a self-awareness coach or a life coach or anything like that. And so, you know, this is a tool, one tool in the toolkit, not meant to be used all of the time, or the antidote for everything right. That's wrong in the world. Certainly not.
But it's helping. So how many people are using it already, or how can people actually get hold of it? Is there some kind of bundles that people can get, or some kind of SDK?
Or perhaps what stage of development is it in?
We have revenue. We had about 25,000 downloads of our beta, our initial story up app, when we were rebranded to Helium and launched a bunch of different products in May of this year at Augmented World Expo, specifically augmented reality products. Every 60 days, you have a new piece of positive, motivational course to add to your media diet, and it's currently being used around the world in Germany, we mentioned the Nurses for Compassion Fatigue attorneys' offices, dentist offices, any areas of confined or situational stress, anything that sucks that you have to go through, you can step inside Helium and hatch some virtual butterflies with those feelings and be reminded, again, that, hey, your thoughts and emotions have power, and that you can,
that's awesome,
that you can, persevere over whatever it is that you're going through. We have a hospice in Ohio that's using our products as well. Imagine not being able to get out and see nature or see the seasons change. Inside Helium, we can not only allow you to see the seasons change, but allow you to see your own, emotions, having the ability to do that. And I should also mention too that when you use Helium, you have the ability to. There are different settings. Our physiology is not the same. Your gamma asymmetry is different than my gamma asymmetry. So you see different levels on there. There's three different levels, but then you have the ability to toggle incrementally higher or lower so that you can fit into your exact, range for what that is. And you also have the ability to put it on the easiest setting so it's impossible to fail. And that's how we encourage our first-time users to use it. Use it to where it's impossible to fail. And what happens is when that left frontal gamma dips below the red line, the experience stops. In some instances, the background will turn red, or there's some alert that, denotes to the user that it's a little bit of negative feedback. And then if you bring it, you have a prompt that comes in that tells you to recall a happy memory, and the narrator has another message. And then as those waves rise above the red bar, then you're able to control the assets again. So that's kind of what the feedback loop looks like.
And for someone, or let's say a company that wants to deploy this, they would be buying Gear VRs with Muses that are bundled together, or kind of what is that process?
Yeah, we sell kits. We also install Helium bars inside enterprises. So right now we're on Oculus Go, Gear VR, Google Daydream, the Lenovo Mirage Solo standalone headset. And our AR, Oculus Rift and Vive are coming soon. Our augmented reality experiences will be coming out on iOS and Android very soon. But if anybody would like to test them, reach out to me and I'll send you a link to download them via test flight. But you can find our demo app on Oculus Go and Daydream, and then our enterprise users or single users can purchase a license to use the pro version of the Helium app. And it also comes with our people who purchase licenses get a curriculum. They get a curriculum about neuromeditation with Dr. Tarrant that talks about these are the different areas of your brain, and these are what your feelings are. We talk about how do you use the headsets, how do you put the devices on, and that type of thing. And that video curriculum is also grows month by month. So we just don't give you the kits and say, here you go, have fun. There's a bit of instruction on our end to educate you not only about virtual and augmented reality, but about meditation, and then also your heart rate.
Yeah, I'd imagine that's a crucial part about the product is, you know, there's only so much you can understand as a layman, like by looking at your own brain and being like, okay, I see it moving, but I don't understand what I'm supposed to do with it, or like, you know, what about asymmetrical gamma waves are going to be beneficial in my life? There's plenty of education I'm sure you have to do on your end to your users.
Yep, absolutely.
Peter, you had a question?
How much does the Muse headset actually cost? Or can you use the app without the Muse band?
Yeah, you can use it without the Muse. So if you just want to, if you download our demo app on Go or Daydream, it prompts you, yes, I'm using a Muse headband. No, I'm not using a Muse headband. If you select no, you're automatically guided through those experiences. You hear relatively the same thing, but you can test drive it, you know, to see what would happen if, you know, you made it all the way through. So you don't need it. And some people find that they use, you know, an external wearable device for a limited amount of time, and then they don't need that the whole time in order to, you know, because they have that emotional guided imagery burnt into their minds. So they don't use it all the time.
Nice.
Fair. Cool. Sarah, how can people find out more about you and perhaps contact you if they want to see some of your work?
Sure. So if you go to hello@story-up.com, hello@story-up.com, and you can also go to our website at TriHelium. And Helium is spelled H-E-A-L-I-U-M. So try HEALIUM.com, and you'll see not only a lot of studies, case studies that have been published about helium. You'll see a little bit more about the back end of the technology, and also some of the people who are creating these experiences who have fascinating stories in and of themselves.
Awesome. And the documentaries that you've worked on are a part of this product?
Some of them,
like the Congo
yeah,
story
some of them, yeah. We have a tab called Empathy, and we do a lot of immersive stories for different social causes. So we've done some stories with Empowered by Light, which educates people about the importance of solar energy. We did a piece with the Mobility Worldwide, which educates people about what it's like that there are all these individuals who are crawling on the ground because they lack access to wheelchairs. So we did a VR documentary in Zambia that allows you to see some of the trash that they literally have to drag their bodies through and experience what that's like to have people, somebody crawling towards you who lacks mobility. So again, you know, allowing the user to step inside their story to become more self-aware of someone else's a situation. And then we also have a tab on Helium called Honor, and that's the origins of our platform. And that's a special area for terminally ill and aging veterans. We've captured the World War II, the Vietnam, the Korea, and the Women's Memorial, all in virtual reality. And then we have a free program for those veterans where we ship kits and allow them to view those memorials in virtual reality. And right now we have a waiting list of 50 of those veterans. We don't have enough headsets to send to them. So if there's anyone out there who's listening to this podcast, and we've reached out to all of the headset makers, so maybe you're aware of a headset manufacturer, and specifically the standalones, because it's difficult for them to hold up a cardboard, and we want them to be able to see it in the highest resolution possible. So if you're a standalone headset maker out there, we have 50 aging veterans. We're losing these men and women at a rate of 500 a day. And, you know, they want the opportunity to see their memorials. We can certainly get them the software, but, you know, we're shipping these kits back and forth to these veterans as fast as we can. And we have a limited amount.
That's awesome. And
that's called Honor Everywhere.
I should mention that.
So if you go to our Facebook page called Honor Everywhere or honoreverywhere.com, you'll see that program. And by doing business with Helium, you help support that program, which provides those headsets in partnership with an organization called Central Missouri Honor Flight.
Awesome. That's awesome, Sarah.
I should mention the Zambia piece that you worked on was the first. It was probably one of the first like VR documentaries that I had watched, and you showed it to me standing in line at somewhere at one of these events a few years back, and you were like, "Here, try this on," and I tried it on, and I remember just thinking how clever it was that how clever it was to use, you know, a 360 camera to bring you down from the standing height that you typically are down to somewhere when someone's crawling on the ground. And I remember the one specific shot where it was an aerial shot, whether it was with a drone or helicopter, I don't know. But I remember just being like, whoa, this is sweet. Just flying over the African plains.
That left...
Yes, it really left like a strong memory. So I'm a big fan of some of your previous documentary works, and now with Helium, it seems like it's kind of come full circle with the what you really want to accomplish with VR.
Well, thank you. The folks at IM360 and they're now Digital Domain, Ryan Whitehead, Art Gajda, helped immensely with that project.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for listening. You can find us at the Research VR Cast on Twitter and everything else down below. Please support us on Patreon. Thank you for the two new people that subscribed. We really appreciate it. Find us on iTunes as well and rate us there. It would be a really huge help for us to be ranked in the charts on the iTunes podcast list for more people to hear about the wonderful work that's being done in virtual reality today. Thank you all for listening again. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us. And if you can thank Dr. Jeff as well when you see him next.
Absolutely. And if anyone's interested in following our journey, Twitter is the best way to find us, or on Facebook, and that's at Helium XR, HEALIUMXR.
Awesome. All right. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.
See you later.
And thank you, Haptex, for sponsoring another episode of the Research VR podcast. If you are a developer and you are interested in haptic feedback and you want to help develop one of the most interesting products in haptic feedback in VR, check out Haptex's careers page at haptex.com/careers. They have a number of open positions that they're trying to fill in. So many of you listeners, I know, have the right skills and talent for jobs like this. So check them out, and thank you again for listening. Goodbye.